Hello, everybody. We got some business to handle. Michael's not here, so we'll do it without him.
Yeah, we will.
First, Facebook. Go there. Like the page. Share the page. Comment some shit. Look at some stuff. There's pictures, videos. Then from there, head on over to Twitter, where you can follow us at the Twitter handle of
@ComesNaturalPod.
All there. And you can follow us there, and you can comment on the stuff, which, oddly enough, is a lot of stuff from Facebook that just gets thrown into the Twitters. So either place you can comment on. We may follow back. Depends on if you're interesting or not. Or not. Then head on over to iTunes, where you can rate, you can review, and most importantly, you can subscribe to get the podcast for free. Every Friday when it comes out. For free. Automatically. Boom. Business is done. And now on to the good stuff. Comes naturally. We are
Joe.
And I'm Cody. That space there was for Mike, just in case he wanted to show up.
But he didn't.
But he did not. So, boom. How you doing, Joe?
I'm actually feeling pretty good right
now. Yeah, you are. Yeah. High as shit right now.
I'm getting there.
Yeah, you are. Edibles are magic. So, where do you want to start today?
I don't know. I figured we'd just pretty much talk about this movie I literally just learned about and then watched.
Fair enough. The movie that Joe is speaking of is called The Lost City of Z, featuring that guy from that gangster bike show.
Is that where he's from?
Yeah, he's from Sons of Anarchy. It's Charlie Hunnam, also from Pacific Rim. He's also the new King Arthur.
Yeah, that's probably where I know him from, is Pacific Rim. I don't know, he was one of those guys, like, I kept looking at him like, that looks like Brad Pitt. But I know it's not Brad Pitt.
No, but Brad Pitt did have to do with this movie.
I did not know that.
His production company.
Well, I mean,
and him. Plan B, which is still the funniest
thing
ever. Which
is not just a joke.
No, it's literally like, that is his production company, Plan B.
Because it's Plan Brad Pitt.
I guess. Like, hey, when all else fails, Plan B.
Exactly.
Which, depending on your lifestyle, could mean something completely different.
Right.
Plan A is what you want to happen. Plan B is what you settle on. Or Plan B is how you get rid of unwanted things.
Yeah.
Kids. So, yes. So, Brad Pitt produced this movie alongside Amazon Studios, which actually, that's actually a falsity. They picked it up at one of the festivals. I don't remember which one it was. Either Sundance or Cannes or something. It doesn't matter. They snatched it up and decided to put it in theaters.
It's also based off of a book.
It is based off of a book, yes.
Based on The Lost City of Z by David Gran.
Yeah, so, and I think we'll talk about the movie a little bit right now. Knowing that it comes from a book kind of makes me think I know why the story was told the way it was.
Because I'm sure that's how it's told in the book.
It's probably told in those
jump
chapters.
Back in the, yeah, in the chapters. Which makes learning about that, it does make sense. I don't know. We'll get into it in a little bit.
I'll just say this. It makes it for a little harder watch as a concisive story.
Yes.
Because it does jump. Like, I get the jump in years, because, like, you don't want to watch them fundraising money for an adventure to go to the Amazon. I get that. But the jump I'm talking about is, like, there's, like, oh, hey, so it's this year. It's, like, 1901. 1903, you're like,
and they're suddenly in the jungle.
The fuck?
You went from Victoria, London.
Yeah, like,
to
they're, like,
fucking jungle.
And the other thing, too, is, like, Ireland, and then, like, went back to, like, you told them, hey, you're going back to England, and you're like, oh, cool. A year later, you're like, oh, shit. Like, that's just, like, lightning, huh? Okay.
Yeah, time flies.
So, it's, and that's the time and jump isn't even the weird part, is the progression of the story. You get told some of it, but it's like you're supposed to assume certain things. Like, the dude is, so Charlie Hunnam plays a character who has whose father is not held in the best regard. But he doesn't know that because he doesn't know his father. But apparently his father's a drunk and a gambler. amongst probably other things, because back then it's probably not the worst things you could be.
Right. There seemed to be a whole lot of, like, extreme, I'm simplifying it, extreme bad stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you've beseeched your name. Like, you've just, his father just, like, drug his name to the dirt.
Yeah.
And people, like, at the beginning of the film kept reminding him of that. And you're like, but all you've said is he's just a drunken idiot.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck did he do that made...
It must have been something terrible.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is, like, and that wasn't, I mean, that was a good chunk into the movie. Not I'm talking, like an hour, but it was, like, a good 30 minutes into it when you finally found out something's wrong. Like, because they mentioned a little bit of, like, you know, he's doing something, he's trying to raise up in the ranks to better himself, which, I mean, and back in the olden days, even now, technically, but even more so back then, the higher you ranked up in the military, the better standing your family would be in.
Yeah.
So if you came from lower stock, as they say, and you raised ranks, you could then make your own life better.
And that was definitely, you could definitely see that when he would be back with his family. Yeah. You could see that the house that they lived in progressively got more fancy.
Yep. And especially in the fact that, like, up until the fact that they removed themselves from society, but... yeah, like, you could see there was, like, not the best digs in the world.
Yeah.
And then, like, the, you know, obviously, like...
It went from, like, more modest stuff to, like, oh, it's a two-story, like, almost like a mansion was what yeah. we would... an estate.
Yeah, an estate, yeah, it's a big thing. And then, obviously, you saw the grander thing when they went to what's-his-dude's
yeah.
house, and you're like, oh, no, that's a manor for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely
that shit's big. But, the story goes this way. So this guy, who probably not his choice, becomes a navigator slash map maker. A while back, then through his military career has gone, and I don't know the whole history of going to Ireland. It's not that far of a reach because, like, once you find out he's going to the Amazon, you're like, oh, that's a far trip. He's slowly working his way, trying to get up and up, but he's, because of his father, his last name, and who his father is, he is not treated the best, and so that shit goes down. And then he gets this appointment to the Royal
Geographical
Society, which I guess is a real thing.
It did used to be.
Yeah. And these dudes are the people who essentially decide the actual boundaries of stuff. I guess.
Well, it wasn't. That's not really what their main point was. Their main point was to fund expeditions and stuff yeah. like that. And hence, that's kind of what they were doing here. They were funding this expedition with the help, or with the idea of, to be able to draw the border to prevent a war.
Well, yeah,
that's what they kept saying.
Which is weird. The we never saw any aspect of that war.
No, they start leading into this, like, you know, if we don't do this, there's going to be a war between nations over the rubber industry there, and it leads you into the rubber plantations, and then from there, just, like, that's it. Not you don't hear the yeah. term rubber.
Yep. Like, it just goes on to, like...
Just goes on.
Yeah, super weird. And what I didn't understand, too, is that when, like, we want the source of the river, I was like, isn't it just a bigger body of water?
Yes, but like I get what they're saying yeah. with that too. But you know, when they finally do reach the quote unquote source of the river, and it's like it's a waterfall, and I'm like, and no one's gonna ask where the source of that is.
Nah, it's fine.
Like, nah. We made it. We finished. We're done. And they literally kill a boar, pack it up, and head back. And
that's the thing that got me too. Is like, so they kill a boar. Like, oh, these dudes are gonna get some real food in them because they were not looking healthy.
No.
But what made him turn back from when they... So they get to this... They get to the source of the river, which is this waterfall, which obviously is not the source. It's, water doesn't just shoot out of the rocks. but they're doing their map stuff, you know, with the little weird yardstick thing. I don't even know what that's for, to tell you the truth. I know it's probably elevation or something. I don't yeah. know. They do that. They're doing all their sketching, and then they see the boar. They kill it. They're like, oh, what's this? And he steps on something, and it's old-ass pottery. You're like, oh, that's weird. And then, obviously, he's, like, super excited about it. He's like, this is proof, blah, blah, blah. And the, what turns them around is a panther. I was like, all right, well, yeah, those are scary. We all got guns.
Yeah, I literally just saw you use one to kill this pig.
So you should probably shoot it. And then
have more meat.
More meat. Plus, it's cool. It's a panther. Right. But also, if you kill the panther, maybe you're not probably going to be safe, but you could at least investigate a little bit more versus taking your broke-ass pottery back to the Londons.
Yeah.
But whatever. Who am I? But yeah, so they go back and it's basically the struggle of a drastically open-minded person trying to change the minds of a bunch of fuddy-duddies who believe that the white man is the best and greatest being on the planet.
Which was very much so a consensus at the time.
Yeah, back in the early 1900s for sure. And because that's like the height, like they even talk about in the movie, of slavery here in the United States way back when. And like they talk about it and they kind of say something that's, I don't want to say offensive because obviously it's the time period. It's what they talk about anyways. But they're like, the savages aren't our business. We don't have to worry about what they're doing. And I was like, all right, that's cool, I guess.
And they kept rejecting the idea that there could be a society out there that could produce pottery.
Yeah.
You know, because in their mind, the quote-unquote savages of the area aren't able to do that.
Yeah. Or concisely plant corn, which you saw them do.
Yeah.
But
yeah, when it gets to that part there, I'm like, okay, we're going to, like, this is the movie, you know, this lost city of Z. We're going to start getting into it. And then they turn around and I'm like, what? Wait, what?
Yeah.
And literally just one of the problems that I have with this movie is a problem that I've explained to Cody multiple times. My one of my biggest problems with movies when they do like these jarring jump cuts, and this one did that a lot, where you would literally go from them getting back on their little raft with the pig, and
boom, England.
Suddenly boom, England, and you're like, oh, okay, he's getting off a boat. It's, you know, congratulations all around, and then they start arguing about. You know, there's some family stuff in there. And then they start, you know, they suddenly jump back to the Royal Society to argue about going back for another expedition. You know, so that's one of my main problems with this movie, was just how the jump cuts, and it just kept moving that goalpost of like this world, you know, this lost city of Z, and trying to figure out what it was. And it just, you know, kept moving those goalposts. And eventually there's no touchdown, really.
No. Spoiler. It's blue balls at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Just you're rock hard and you're just like, oh, it's going to happen. And then they walk away.
There's something else that bothered me in the movie, and I'm trying to remember what it was. Was it
Tom Holland's mustache?
No, actually, that bothered me. I thought it was pretty funny that, you know, the mustaches were like, the dress and stuff was just funny to me, but it's period piece, so I really couldn't care about that. I will say that I didn't know Robert Pattinson was going to be in it. That is a lesser thing that kept bothering me, going, that guy looks like the Twilight guy.
But this guy
actually can act. Yeah, I don't get it, and he doesn't look pale. What the fuck?
Yeah, like yeah, like, I didn't know he was in it. Like, I knew Tom Holland was in it. I knew Charlie Hunnam was in it.
Charlie Hunnam, Sienna Miller, yep. And Ian McDermott.
Yep, Chancellor Palpatine himself was in it. I saw him right away. I was like, oh, shit! Because I knew he was in it. I just didn't know how much he was going to be in it. And he was in it quite a bit for the most part. Charlie Hunnam in it, but
yeah,
more prominent than I expected.
I remember what it was that also bothered me. So you would have these long scenes, specifically the first time that they go out and then the second time that they go out, where it's literally just these five guys on a boat.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, you know, they make reference in the first expedition of, oh, we lost the second boat.
That was the second expedition.
Yeah.
It's when he got off the boat and made peace.
But at any given time, you'd only see this group of at most five people.
Yeah.
And then suddenly there's a scene where there's like an extra couple of dudes in the background.
Yeah, when they're like, gonna get, when they went after or when they gave the dude the last horse.
Yeah, and you're like, I'm pretty sure I didn't fall asleep during this movie.
Also, where the fuck did the horses come from? Yes. I was like,
I get it. You had that throwaway line where you said, "Well, where's the second boat?" But yeah. You never showed that second boat. And then he would so make weird. Mention to about his Indian guides, and you're like, "What?" But it's just you five.
Yeah,
there was no really other
weird,
people.
Yeah, and that might be a cost of making the movie or a weird editing.
I'm gonna hopefully chalk it up to a weird editing
thing. Because like the main cast. So Charlie Hunnam and his two buddies, the main two guys with him. So Robert Pattinson's the other guy. Obviously, they're the driving force of everything because they're the ones that go into the thing. But like,
absolutely,
when they go into and they make friends with the first group of Indians,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, I guess really friends with the only group of Indians they made friends with. But anyways, it's the three of them, four of them, but he refuses to partake in the eating of another human being. Which, done wrong, probably wouldn't have done it myself.
But I wouldn't have
walked away. I'd have been like,
they actually didn't, or at least they didn't show it.
They didn't show it, yeah. So you have that part, and then like they find the guy, and that's when you see the extra. But I'm like, yeah, we were just in that camp.
And there wasn't that guy.
It was just the three of them.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. The three of them were in the tent with, or the lodging thing, whatever, with the chief and his son. I get that part. But they're wandering around the camp. Are these dudes just hanging out by the riverbank? Like, la-di-da-da-da-da.
Which, sure, fine, if that's what they're doing, but, like, show it.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Just the horse part bothered me. We gave you our last horse. Motherfucker, you didn't have a horse.
Yeah, like,
where were you stowing that horse?
And how many did you have? How big was that second boat?
Exactly.
Because according to what I saw,
you were constantly out of rations.
Yeah, always.
How did you keep a horse alive?
Well, horse.
Where the fuck did the paraffin wax come from that he...
Paraffin oil.
Paraffin oil, sorry.
Yeah.
I guess that would have been for lights and stuff like that.
Yeah, lamps and shit.
Lamps and shit, but...
Which we, by the way, didn't see.
Didn't see either, yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story. And obviously, I know the moral behind it is that, you know, white man wasn't the end-all be-all, and there's other societies, and we didn't know. And then at the end of the movie, it does those
tells you
text
about what
screen
actually
what
happened.
You know, like the fact that him and Jack were never seen again, but there were stories. And then later on in the 21st century, his findings were
validated,
legitimately
yeah.
identified as being like true. He was right. There was a lost city of Z where he said it would be, which they were there like literally like twice. And obviously like it makes you think he made it before they tell you that he disappeared, because they're bringing him down and they're walking up and you see like
all those torches and shit.
Yeah, you see they come down to the water and it comes up the other side, and you see in the trees there's an opening and you can see smoke coming out. Like, obviously there's more to this. I would have liked to fucking see it. But that aside, this, I think, was by far Charlie Hunnam's best acting performance that I've seen.
I'm going to say straight up, like, with the exception of those two problems that I had with it, it is a very good movie.
Yeah.
I kept sitting there thinking, well, this should have been like an Amazon original series.
Yes.
Like, make the first season about the first adventure there,
yep.
So that I can give a crap more about these people.
Yeah, because it seems like they went through a whole lot more than what we saw.
Because
they do reference the diseases. The one guy was vomiting blood. Don't worry, he didn't survive. He was not long for this world, as they say.
That was the guy that they kicked over the boat edge, right?
After he died, yeah. And then he thought what's-his-face was dead.
Yeah, which you show him, because at one point they're pushing the boat along through the river, through the shallows, and he's just vomiting chunks of, like,
dude,
red
terrible,
stuff.
Like, dark crimson,
black,
fucking
red.
Oh. It was terrible. I was
but
like,
literally the next scene is, like, they're all malnourished.
There we go.
Jeez.
Words.
I'm an engineer, not words.
Yeah,
not
we
a
know.
Wordsmith. Yeah, they're all just malnourished.
I'm not a dictionary guy, doctor. Good.
They're just all malnourished, and they literally just seem to like poke this dude, and they're like, ah, he's dead, and they kick him over the side. And
yeah,
like,
it starts off, and they kick him over the side. I'm like, well, it's actually one of the most. There's two scenes in this movie that really like were terrifying. The war scene in World War One.
Yes.
That shit was fucking gnarly. It was very short too. Like they made the charge and people were getting fucking lit up by the mounted guns.
Yeah.
It was terrifying. The chlorine gas, like everything was terrifying. Mm-hmm. But the piranha scene.
Right there.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's like, I can see these fish, but I can't catch them. And then like the dude takes the dart or spear thing
straight to the chest. Through the chest.
Just protrudes through. And at first I thought it hit. Like I was like, that's weird. And then I realized, oh no, that came through.
Yeah.
He turns, you see it. They're fucking throwing them, shooting them, whatever they're doing. They get out. Charlie Hunnam gets off balance, thrown over the side. Is trying to help this guy. They both get caught in the fishing net.
Mm-hmm.
And he's bleeding. The one dude that got stuck with the fucking pokey stick. He's bleeding. And you're like, oh, that dude's not going to make it. That shit's infected for sure. Already.
Oh, yeah, definitely infected. Well, you didn't have to worry about that for long.
Because then piranha set in.
Yeah.
And obviously at this point in history, they probably didn't really know what piranhas were.
Yeah, probably not.
Because I'm pretty sure piranhas are kind of a thing from South America.
Yes.
I don't know of them being anywhere else, and I could be wrong about that because I'm not a fish doctor. But that shit was fucking terrifying. I knew Charlie Hunnam wasn't going to die. Like,
to be under for a long time.
He was there for a while.
Really, and questioning
they're
like
hacking
how...
that fucking at that net, and I was like, bro, someone help him.
Yeah.
But the thing about it was crazy. He gets out, and he's got, like, blood on his hand. I'm guessing he probably got nipped or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that got me, though, is they're on this river, and obviously they're not doing great. And this, you literally see this, like, blood being, like, with bubbles and everything. And as the boat drifts away, the bubbles just continue in the activity.
In one place,
in one area, you just, like, realize that, like, they're moving forward. And oh, dude,
just there being munched on by those fucking fish.
It was scary.
Which, by the way, literally seemed like day one, like just the way they went from the rubber plantation to that. It was like, well, was that day one?
It definitely wasn't.
That dude didn't survive very long.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm guessing in the book, you probably have a lot more of what happened, what goes on, because like. They talk about all the disease they pick, like the weird diseases and the vomiting of blood and the wounds that you get. Like the dude's leg was gnarly.
Oh, you're talking about the fat guy?
Yeah.
He's just sitting there scratching at it in the middle of the rapids.
Oh, God, dude. But after that, though, after they fished him out of the water, and when he's got losing his mind, right before they put him on the last horse. You see the fucking how gross it's gotten, and it's like the flesh is being eaten away by whatever. I was like, pack your shit
and get
out.
The fuck out.
Because finding a lost city is definitely not worth your fucking leg eating itself off your body.
Yeah. But that was literally, that was the second trip. Because, you have that. He comes back to England. He makes everybody's congratulating him for being a hero and mapping this area. And he makes a point to say, look, you know, there's all these peoples out there. They're so deep into the forest that, you know, we didn't think possible up until this point. So we need to mount another expedition where pretty much most of the rest of the scientists, quote unquote, of this society are like, no, that's preposterous. These are savages and, you know, blah, blah, blah. None of this can exist. You were just delirious. And then they have that one guy, the big fat guy, that's like, no, this is gonna be awesome. Let's do this.
I'll fund it.
I will fund it as long as I get to come with you, because he was known as
he was the one that went to the Arctic for the first
time. Yeah, what a piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah, he's a.
By the time they meet the first group of natives there, the ones that. Well, shot them the first time.
Yep.
Charlie Dunham's character, basically makes friends with him.
Yep.
But this dude has already lost his fucking mind.
Yeah.
And just eats up a bunch of shit and just goes crazy. They eventually get to the point where did they explain how he got that leg thing?
No.
It just kind of like showed up to me.
Yeah, because they talk about it the first time because what's his Robert Pattinson's character, I can't think of, was it Costin or something?
Yeah.
Had that, one on his arm.
Yeah.
And they talked about the wounds can fester.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing he got hit, like nicked by something, and it just got infected and got worse. But he didn't take care of it because.
Oh, he took care of it, all right. Like I said, the rapid scene where they're just going through the rapids and they're like, it's no, just, everybody has to stay in their area. First off, this dumb shit's standing. They're yelling at him to lay down. He's just standing there, just going at it on his leg. Just, I swear to God, he scratched a hole through his jeans. That's what it looked terrible. Like.
It was.
Fucker goes over, almost tips the boat over, loses a bunch of rations right there. You know, and Charlie Dunham's character's like, just swim to the shore. We're going to meet you on shore. Just go, you fat fucking piece of shit.
Yep.
Then even still in his own delirium and being given food and their last horse.
Yep.
Which, again, no second boat, no horse shown during this rapid scene.
But it was there, just not there.
But it was there.
Yep.
Maybe they traveled over land, I don't know, which would be weird. So they make it to the to as far as they could go, but they find out that the fucking fat piece of shit put paraffin oil all over their food, which rendered it inedible, apparently. Yep.
Trying to force them to go back, basically.
Yeah. And so, you know, they show Charlie Dunham's character then sending a telegram out or whatever they used to saying, look, you know, we had to turn back and
we sent him
out, but we haven't had word from him. Yep. So we're pretty sure he's dead. You know, but whatever. Fast forward, what, a couple years or whatever it is takes to get back to London, and boom, there's the fucking fat ass sitting there
at the society
and has the balls to blame Charlie Dunham's character, Percy Fawcett.
Yep, Percy Fawcett.
For abandoning him.
Yep. Yeah. And he wants an apology.
Yeah.
Not only just an apology, but he wants an apology in front of Charlie Hunnam's wife.
Which I guess would be to make him not look like such a good guy in front of her, but...
Yeah, like, I don't... It was fucking... Because he... The way they portray it in the movie, I'm guessing the story, is... Charlie Hunnam talked big game in front of his wife, was shown all the dignities of the inner circle in front of his wife, so he wanted to show that, hey, not only is your husband a lying sack of shit who tried to have me murdered or killed, but he is a big fat fucking liar as well. He's just like his dad, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I literally wanted to throw my shoe at the fucking screen. I was like, this fucking guy... And because he's higher up and he's more well-renowned, people believed him.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you this motherfuckers. Fuck.
But he doesn't get the satisfaction.
Nope.
Charlie Dunham's character, Percy, just fucking like, nope, fuck this. I quit. Yep. I'm out.
Fuck you guys.
I'm out. And then World War I breaks out. And this literally becomes a war movie at that part.
Crazy.
And that's
was
where
weird.
You're getting into the whole, oh, my God, so fucking awful.
Yeah, dude.
Especially since I knew... That one, you know, when they start lining up, and I'm like, are they gonna? They're gonna charge.
Yeah,
bayonets. They're gonna fucking charge. And
so
I know
the British
during,
do it. Did it, man?
Yeah. Well, that's how pretty much
everybody
in World War One did it. And I just know that that was fucking awful. And they showed it. You know, they just get up and they run over
and
the
just,
and they're just getting fucking mowed down. And Percy is just gun fucking ho.
Yep.
Just running through it, and. Yeah, they hit him with the chlorine gas.
Yep.
What's his name? His friend is just sitting there, you know, shouting, you know, get your mask on, get your mask on, it's chlorine. And then his other friend gets shot in the face, and you're just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, brutally, too.
Brutal. Just,
and then he gets up to try to grab the body, gets overtaken by the gas, falls down, wakes up in a hospital with bandages on his face, family all blah, blah. Yeah, it was like... It's a really good movie. Don't let the jump cuts take you away from it. It's definitely a good movie. It's fun. There's some funny parts in it. Obviously, some sad parts in it.
Yeah.
Some emotional parts in it. But it's obviously loosely based on real stuff. I don't know if Percy Fawcett is a real person in history.
No, but according to this, he was.
There you go. I don't know.
Because this was literally based off of his disappearance with his son in the Amazon.
There you go. Based on true story.
Yeah.
Which is, that's the thing.
Again, though, we're not sure how, you know.
Yeah.
This is one of those, you know, Hollywood based on a true story thing. Well, obviously, you know, it shows in the end there. He retires after the war. Because doctor said he'll never go back to the Amazon again, which was surprised that he actually said okay, because the way he was so just fucking gun-ho about for doing sure this. But yeah, they spend some time off wherever cottage it was, but then you find out that their son sent a letter to an American newspaper, and it basically ignites this whole thing again where him and his son at this point now are the only ones that were going after this city, I guess. That's how it happened, right?
So,
because just the way the whole movie was shot, I could never, or I just couldn't figure, were there other people?
So there was other people with him at first, and then he writes a letter to his wife saying that the rest of the group has gone home, but they're going to carry on.
Just him and his son.
Yep. And I was like, wait, is that the best? Is that a good idea?
That's not really a good decision.
I mean, it could have turned out worse, I guess. But like, yo, not a great choice. Also, no. Trudging through some of the worst jungle that I've ever seen in my life. Probably not the greatest choice either. But that's when this is the end of the end-ish of the movie. Him and his son get ambushed. Ambushed.
Yeah.
By a group of natives who were wearing red. They try to retreat, get chased, Indiana Jones style.
Literally up over a hill, yep. Arrows just flying past them. I was sitting there waiting for somebody to shout, "Start the plane, Jock, start the plane."
Yep. Then the blues show up because they were wearing blue. You think they're going to defend them. Like a spear, like you're like, oh shit, like you're trapped between two warring things, right? And then one of the blues throws a spear, like, don't kill Spider-Man! And then it flies past him and kills one of the reds. Not quickly, by the way.
No, dude.
He was on the ground miserably suffering with a fucking spear through his gut. And then they chase the reds off. That sounds racist, by the way, but it's not. They're wearing red. So red versus blue. Then they, as they're doing that, they surround Charlie Hunnam and Peter Parker, and you're like, oh, this actually went way differently than I thought.
Yeah, it's a lot less protection.
Yep, and because they're like, not like, hey, we're protecting you, surrounding. No, like, they're surrounding him with points toward Adam. And I was like, well, y'all in some trouble, because those are the pointy ends of stuff, and that's usually what kills you.
Mm-hmm.
If I learned anything from Game of Thrones.
Stick him with the pointy end.
Yep. And then, just to end it, that's when they, essentially, him and his son come to the sense that, hey, we're going to die, so let's just do whatever they want us to. And so they drink some weird liquid.
I thought they were going to start tripping balls at that point.
I think they kind of were, in a way. Like, they kind of went really, like...
Yeah, but I thought we would, like, really, you know? See it, because...
Yeah.
That whole part with the natives, they have them at some, you know, right in front of what looked to be the chieftain of the tribe, and they're like, you know, we need to see where this Christian spirit is, you know, belongs. And you're like, well, they're gonna die.
Yeah.
And then they bring him down to that one area, and they feed him the whatever drink that was, and they just go loopy. And I'm like, oh, this is how we learn about the Lost City. Maybe then they start walking him down the river, and I was like, are they just gonna dump him in the river? That'd be kind of fucked up. And then the movie ends, and you're like, what?
Well, it jumps to his wife.
Oh, that's true. It jumps to his wife. Yeah,
who's wearing all black? Who's not given up hope, but she got a message from someone from Brazil saying that several people have seen her husband and her son living with the Indians.
Yeah.
Again, that's what they called them. It's not me being racist. Indigenous people, as it's referred to, shortened down to Indians. So she still has hope, but the society, who at this part I'm guessing is falling apart because of post-war and all that fun stuff, has said, like, we've sent hundreds of people after them, and we just...
Nothing.
And then earlier, when he was about to go on his last voyage with his son, he told the head of the society, if I reach there, I will send you this old-ass compass, which I'm guessing was his dad's.
Yeah.
Back to prove to you that I got to where I need to.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, that's not necessary. Well, she then hands him
the compass,
and he goes, well, I'm gonna have this authenticated or whatever, or checked out. She's like, you know, thank you very much. She walks out, and a weird
transition.
I think it's supposed to be a symbolism, but you hear her walking, you hear her steps landing on wooden floors as she walks through, and then the camera focuses on her reflection in a mirror as she walks by, and then you hear the sounds of the jungle,
yeah,
and her walk into what looks like the jungle, but in this reflection of the, and it was weirdly weird, and then it cuts and gives you the word saying, hey, this is what's happened.
And yeah, that point exactly, because that was what my face was, because they brought the lights up at that point, and I was like, huh? What the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah, like, what?
Why did she suddenly end up in the jungle in this pseudo-ending dream sequence thing? Especially since the wording at the end just basically says that she lived her life, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, it was really bizarre.
Really bizarre. But, yeah, I mean, it's a good movie. It's a good story.
A good movie,
yeah. It's extremely well acted. I just wish that I could get more of it. Like I said, I wish that it was just more of an Amazon original series where you could play up literally the first trip to the Lost City, because you don't really know that it's a trip to the Lost City at the beginning. They're just trying to map the border between Brazil and Bolivia, right? Yeah.
Yes. Well, it's in Bolivia.
No, it was the yeah. It's it in South
Bolivia.
America.
Yeah,
yeah. They were trying to map
they went
the border
to Bolivia,
between...
and then they went up the Amazon River.
Yeah,
to then draw the border between. Yeah, okay, that's what it was. Yeah,
but I just wanted to care about these characters more. Like, obviously, the main guy, and well, the main three guys.
Yep.
You know, you cared about because they were in most of the movie. But every other death and every other thing that happened, and you know, going from him from Victorian England, all, you know, healthy and proper, to him in the jungle, you know, obviously was several weeks.
Months, I think.
That months.
Point. Yeah, because they
I'm
said he was
really
gone
sure.
for like 3 years.
But he looks like shit.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And then suddenly when he's back in London in the next scene, he looks perfectly healthy again. You know, so there's just like that stuff. Like, I didn't really care about these characters that much. To get the full impact of the emotions and whatnot behind it. I don't know if that was the same with you, Cody.
In a way it was, yeah. You said it. You care more about the three of them because you see them as a group. And the cool thing about them is they started off as complete strangers.
Yeah.
Because Charlie's character meets Robert Pattinson's character on the boat, and probably one of the most intense scenes.
Yeah.
And you watch it, you'll understand what I mean. And then, just offhandedly, the third guy of their main of the trio is already in Brazil, I guess, or with them in Bolivia, and he's like, he joins the group as part of the expedition, and then kind of like is. In a way, like, you almost see he's like an antagonist in a way, because he's like talking down about the Indians,
mm-hmm,
and like, their guide and whatever. But then obviously, like, it just, they form this brothership over the shit they went through, which again you don't get to see a lot of because
no,
you don't get to see a lot of it. But yeah, I mean it's interesting for sure.
That is another part that I sat there wondering about, Did they ever make mention of the that he was supposed to meet somebody on the boat?
Yes, when they told him that he was going, they said everybody else is en route or if there. He's catching up to them.
Right.
But no, I don't think they specifically said anything about on the boat.
Yeah, so it was a very weird sequence where he notices that somebody's like tracking him on the boat, yep. You know, like following him. And he basically traps
sets
him.
Sets a trap.
You know, knocks him over, and then they finally you finally find out that he was a contact that he was supposed to meet on the boat.
He was going to be part of their expedition, and like he's waited a week while they're on the boat to introduce himself, even though obviously he knew who he was.
Yeah, it was really weird to me.
It was very bizarre. I don't think they actually talked about that. Like they didn't talk about Robert Pattinson's character supposed to meet him on the boat. I think it was in the line, you waited a week to introduce yourself, was telling you that, oh, this person was on the boat but didn't approach him. And you realize he's a drunk at that point, so.
Yeah.
It wasn't exactly, like, the best way. But, yeah, no, it was a really, there's some really bizarre stuff, but it's still a
Which
really
was another
movie.
Thing that was, like, very much, like, seemed to be a setup for something that just never paid off. You're drunk, you know, well, you can't be drunk on this expedition, pours out his whiskey or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to show that he was like this downtrodden drunk and then became best friends with him. And like,
which would be fine, again, if you had more time to sit there and explore all these characters
and see withdrawals of alcohol and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but you don't. It just kind of skips from scene to scene. And in those scenes, it's interesting, but they just string them all together. And it's just very not interesting and oddly confusing at times where you're trying to wonder, you know, what's going on.
Yeah, and then you have to take what happened in the scenes before and apply to them what they're talking about now to realize what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, whatever. It's an unconventional storytelling, for sure. And Joe is correct. It should have been, just like most books, should be a television event of some sort, be it streaming or on the actual televisions. Prefer streaming so I can binge watch the shit out of it.
Right.
But also the production value and not limited to network television restraints of commercials and stuff. But we've had this discussion about stuff and on here before, about books and stuff, that a lot of it, there's too much of it to just make a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we talked about this before when we were on our Stephen King show. When we found out the plot for the Dark Tower movie, Joe was very excited because he has finished the books. Mm-hmm. I have not. I'm on my way. I'm more than halfway through. The movie isn't adapting the original story. It's an additional story to it. So it's like a continuation in a way, where most movies, we'll use another Stephen King one as an example, it's being remade. They've already designed it to be a two-part movie. So first movie, second movie. If you remember the original, it was a 6-part miniseries.
I think so. Yeah.
Right. We've discussed this before. I'm sure you're 6. And if I'm wrong,
oh well,
you can look it up. Because the book is so, I mean, I'm looking at it. It's so dense. Like it's a very long book, but there's so much in it. That they needed to make it in a miniseries because of all this stuff that happens. Because it's not one of those things where, like, oh, you can just cut out this stuff. There's stuff that's in it that needs to be in it to get you to point B from A. So it's not just A to B. It's A.1, A.2, A.3, all these through to B, so you can get to B and know these characters and know these things. This is a perfect example. Yes, it was a really good movie. It was well acted. It was a beautifully shot movie.
Mm-hmm.
It could have easily been shaky cam at certain points, but it was not.
Nope.
It was very steady all the time. Even like the running scenes, they did a gorgeous job. It did help that we were sitting in a very nice theater watching it.
Yes.
But to Joe's point, and the reason I'm bringing this up is you could have had a lot more in-depth character development if it were made to be either a 19-hour long movie or a television type event where you have, even if it was split to like a 6-episode thing where like first 2 episodes are his transition from being in Ireland to going into the Amazon, The second one being his secondary jaunt and run in the Amazon, just so you can see more of what's going on, and then see the, like, because you get this impact that what he did is huge for England.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he gets, like, these people showing up, and when he's seen coming off the boat, they explode into cheer.
Yeah.
And you don't know why. And you still don't understand why, other than the fact that, oh, it's a big deal. You're like, obviously it's a big deal.
Yeah.
These people are here cheering for someone they don't know.
Yeah. This is literally just random people. This isn't people from the society.
This is, like, regular people.
Yeah.
And they're like, congratulations. Like, they know him by name because he's, like, in the papers as, like, this.
And the only thing I can
hero.
Think of is that it was another throwaway thing that they did during the second expedition, because they made mention of how he'll send letters back so that they can publish them.
The third one. Yeah, it's with his son. Yeah.
So, but they never mentioned that during the
I don't know if it's one of those.
I can understand the fanfare because, you know, obviously you don't have, you know, video games, television, and stuff like that. You know, other
internet.
Things for distraction. So you have books and things to read. So if you have literally a guy that's traveling through the unknown parts of Amazonia, as they kept calling it, which was fucking hilarious.
Yep.
It's also funny that this is an Amazon movie,
yes,
and it's about the Amazon.
What if they changed it to make it that way?
No, they didn't.
I know. There's actually a guy going through Africa, but they didn't. Company not called Africa.
Yeah, right.
But
yeah, they never explained that to begin with, or at least I don't remember them explaining it.
The third one, I think. Well, again, I don't know if they actually say specifically that he's gonna write these to be published, but the expedition is being paid for by a consortium of newspapers from America, the Americas, as they call it. So it's more of him, I'm guessing, to publish through those newspapers, periodicals, whatever they happen to be, the adventures of him.
Yeah.
But yes, I don't know if they specifically say.
But in the
outright,
first two
hey,
expeditions,
do, yeah.
I don't remember. I do remember them saying that for the third one.
And yes, and
it's
then
just
the
for
second
the first
one,
two, just I don't didn't
he
say.
He sends the
plus, but that's another thing.
Telegram
that's,
back.
Yeah,
yeah, I don't think there's anything.
They just, I don't know. Again, it just felt like there should have been so much more that they could have shown and that they should have shown. Really.
Yeah,
in this movie, just to explain the little things, and that's what I like is when you make things make sense. How do you get all the telegrams back? Well, they didn't explain it until the third expedition, where they say that they're gonna have when they encounter a tribe, they're gonna give letters to these tribal people and have them take it.
Yep.
Back.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
Good movie if you get a chance to see it.
Yeah,
it's a good
movie.
Time.
It really is.
Boom, that's that.
Mm-hmm.
World War II.
Call of Duty?
Call of Duty, World War II, or COD WWE, was officially announced today.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys haven't seen it, I did not post the trailer on the Facebook page. I mean, I could. If you're not a Call of Duty fan, you can just tune out for right now. I'm not going to say it's the best first-person shooter game ever, franchise ever, but I enjoy them a lot. I play all of them. They're the most consistently well-produced games.
Oh, very much so.
I think Activision has nailed down the production, how to produce these, because they do come out. I mean, you have games like Assassin's Creed that for a long time were coming out with a new one every year, and you can see how badly they suffered because of that, especially mm-hmm. the last few with all the weird glitches they had. This, if you guys don't know, is a group, is two different companies that do the games, so they have a 2-year production cycle, which is pretty fucking fast for a game that for something that's completely and utterly having me made up every time.
It really is, but it really also allows them to focus on their thing.
Yep. So you're not working one team doubly as hard. You're working one team hard to do what they need to while the other one gets released. So every year, like last year, we had Advanced Warfare, Infinite Warfare. That is a different team than what's bringing us Call of Duty World War II.
Right.
So when the next year's game comes out, so next year's game, it'll be most likely Infinite Warfare 2 or whatever they want to call it. Or they could be going back to Black Ops 4. It doesn't matter. What I'm saying is this game shows a lot of attention to detail and a little we've seen so far.
Oh, yeah.
We've really seen only a very short, jam-packed trailer. A lot of shit goes on it. We saw a wee little glimpse of a multiplayer lobby known as Headquarters,
mm-hmm.
and we saw a picture from Zombies, which we knew was coming because this is from the same team who made, you know, Zombies what it is. The biggest thing I noticed, and it kind of was beat down into the fact, is Call of Duty going back to its roots, boots on the ground, realistic warfare.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. They've gone astray a little bit because people are like, oh, they're going to have jetpacks in World War II. I would definitely see that be super fun.
It would be kind of like an add-on.
Yeah.
Battlefield did it when you had 1942, and then you had the experimental weapons of 1942. Yeah,
exactly. So
that was kind of fun.
But in this one, it is very, very... I mean, they talk about some of the weapons you have in it, which is all like, there's no repeating guns. You have the first machine gun, but you don't have assault rifles the way we think of assault rifles. It's all just rifles,
mm-hmm.
Five or six in a magazine or a clip. Very brutal. They're talking about, you know, because like, if I'm not mistaken, some of these don't even like some of these are. I don't know, they're all rifles, so they all have rifling, but like,
yeah,
they're all a human handheld like weapon. There's not a whole lot of like in place stuff, and because World War II is very mobile, like very well. From what we've seen, is very human.
I mean, they have
tanks and shit, stuff. But like, this is
there are mounted like you know because they said right away like the very first level is Normandy. You're storming the beach in Normandy, and that's actually what you see in the trailer.
Yes,
storming the beach of Normandy, which looks absolutely horrific.
Yeah, like fucking terrifying.
If you've seen Saving Private Ryan,
this is the video game version of it. Yeah,
yeah. So you do have the mounted machine guns there on the beach, and the planes. Oh my god!
When the planes are
doing the strafing run and just
Christ, dude,
fucking blow through that one guy.
That one guy just gets laced by like two or three bullets.
Yeah,
and the other guys look like shit. I gotta run. So I mean, yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how they do it because if you didn't get a chance to play or you didn't want to play Infinite Warfare, it was a very different campaign structure to any other Call of Duty.
Okay.
Did you ever play Infinite Warfare?
No, I haven't yet.
So, Infinite Warfare, if you've ever played Mass Effect,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say it plays like Mass Effect because it's not, but the way it's set up is you become the captain of a starship.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So basically, I'm going to break down Infinite War for you real quick. So there's a celebration on Earth where they're like, hey, there's peace all over Earth. We're explorers of the galaxy. We're moving further into, and we've already moved further into space. We have the capability, our ships can go sublight and leave our area and go to these other worlds that we've discovered. I don't know. This is way in the future. This is like 25 something. So like years have gone by, but you're like, and me, I was thinking, why if this is peace on Earth, why the fuck do we have an army?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a space Navy. So there are big old ships and stuff. And you find out the whole premise of this movie of the game is there's this other faction that is like split off of Earth and is gone essentially rogue.
Okay.
So that's why we still have a Navy and military force, because of this other terrorist group who has essentially split society.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just like this small little faction. They're a very large group, but they have left, and they're out on their own, out in the reaches of space.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking dope. So during this big celebration on Earth, they're christening a new ship and all these new things, and they have these space guns. Literally, they're guns that shoot into space. That's a naming thing that might come up with. And, you know, there's a base on the moon, and they get attacked. These terrorists attack this day, start fucking shit up, full-on, like, invasion forces are taken down, and it's a drastically planned attack. They're, like, targeting the guns so they can get into our atmosphere onto the Earth, and full wage, they're using robots to fight against us. We have robots, but we don't trust them because of this faction. And so we fend them off in a way, and they start to retreat, so we go after them. So you get in your starship, and you play as a leader of a group, but you're a pilot. And so you go up, and the space combat's dope because it's like it goes along space physics. You can turn on a dime because it's literally just spinning your ship and just thrusting the other way, but it's like slower, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. It's really cool. And you have this spacing, and then like you fin them off, they jump, you're getting ready to jump, so everyone has to land on their respective ships. You find out during the battle your commanding officer has been killed, so you're the highest ranking person, so you become captain, and you have to take the war to them, which means you get to jump, which is fucking cool. And you basically strike. So when it comes to the Mass Effect part is, you get to this new area, and you get to choose where you want to go.
Oh, wow.
And it goes by more difficult. And as you go through, you get different guns. And then the cool thing about it is you can customize your loadout like you can, like a multiplayer thing.
Uh-huh.
You can modify your gun the way you want. You get to carry the accessories you want, the special weapon stuff. And then you basically take the war to them.
Okay.
The level structure is still very Call of Duty-ish. It's you move forward because otherwise they keep coming.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a good job of making it not just more rails-based. You know, you're like, oh, just you have to go forward. There's different ways you can go to things. It's open in a way, but not truly open. But there's like, I want to go in this building to shoot down these people. You can.
Okay.
You know? It's just you have to follow the Call of Duty mantra of move forward or the battle keeps going.
Yeah.
So you clear out an area. If you don't move forward, eventually bad guys are going to show up again. Let's go to the cutscene, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So then you get to go through this, and it's really a really fun way of doing it. And it changed the single player campaign, how it's told, drastically. It sounds like they're doing some stuff like this, and we'll find out more in June at E3. Just how they're doing it, because there was early rumors that there was a single player story campaign, a co-op story campaign, which you play with another person or more people, the multiplayer, and then obviously the zombies. Now in the press conference today, they did not dispute there's not a campaign for
multiplayer
or co-op,
right?
But what they did say is the co-op they referred to as the zombie campaign. So we'll see how it actually plays out.
Yeah.
But it doesn't it takes place in World War II, but it doesn't. They talk about how the Third Reich was working on making these soldiers, and then obviously some shit went down.
Yeah.
So we don't know if we play German soldiers. You don't know if you play American soldiers. You don't know if you play a group of multiples. I don't really know how it plays out, because again, we don't know details yet. They showed us a single image from it, which looked dope, because the guy's all stapled back together. But yeah, it's interesting. The trailer, dope. It had real actors in it, which we knew they were going to be, because that's how they go now. AAA games always have real people in them. Call of Duty is well known for having actors being portrayed visually as well as by the voice in the games, which is something like stuff like Battlefield doesn't do Because again, Battlefield is mostly multiplayer. They do the story, but it's, you know, never front and center.
No.
I'm sure they have voice actors. It's just not well known movie actors. Like this has Josh Duhamel and Jonathan Tucker. As of right now, it's all we know. And I, what was the other?
Fuck, what was his name?
Jerry. I can't remember his name. He's a voice actor. He's been on TV too before, but so those are the two big ones we know of now. They're physically, you can, like, the picture I'm looking at right now is, looks like Josh Duhamel dressed in World War II gear, and you realize that's actually the video game version of him, and it's fucking gorgeous.
Yeah, his character animation as well was just spot on.
Yeah.
The other two, like, you could see it, but, you know, like, right away, you were like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I was like, oh, my God, that is Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yep, I literally thought it was, like, you see him for a split second, you hear his voice, like, oh, shit, that was Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And it turns out it was Jonathan Tucker.
Yeah.
And once I found it was Jonathan Tucker, I was, oh, okay, that's what he did. Yeah, definitely him. But it looks, they look like their characters, which is super dope. The animation is really good. The best part is everything we saw was in-game footage. So which means you're using in-game assets to run everything. If you know what that is, Mass Effect had a problem with that. Because they used... Mass Effect, for the first time ever, used in-game assets to make their cutscenes. And some shit went wrong. People held guns the wrong way. People's faces didn't really show up so well. That's a whole different story. But this... is exciting because it's World War II again. It's again where Call of Duty started, but it's a modern game made for World War II. Just like Battlefield 1 is a modern main game set in World War I. So it looked gorgeous. It played really well. The story needed some help, but
yeah,
that's, we're not talking about that. It played really well. It looked really good. It's a great game. I'm not taking it away from Battlefront or Battlefield 1. It is a fantastic game. I enjoyed it a lot. But Call of Duty is still the king of first-person shooters, especially multiplayer. There's a reason you don't hear about Battlefield 1 championships.
Yeah.
It's just Call of Duty has just done such a good job. People may complain about it, but it's still the number one selling. It's the number one in competitions. It's just they do a really good job, and they're going back. Why, you may ask? A different group of people are doing it. It's the people who originally did it. But the technology has gotten so advanced in the last 10 years that they can tell better stories. They can tell more in depth stories.
Mm-hmm.
They can change how the game is played, how it feels, and they can take everything they've learned in the last 10 years. And reapply it to something obviously they cared about a lot, because they weren't the first to do a World War II game.
No.
But they're the ones that essentially, I don't want to say perfected it, but made it to what it needed to be and stepped up the game to, for everybody else to follow. Because Battlefield was the thing for those old day,
mm-hmm.
those old timey war games, old timey 10 years ago. well, I was just close to like 15 years ago, but with like Battlefield 1942, which obviously the heat of World War II, no one has really done a World War I game, mainly because of it's not that exciting. Modern stuff, modern for World War II, just made the get that much better. Battlefield 1, obviously, the technology was there to make things like functional tanks in the game and the weapons work the way they should have. They did an amazing job with it. But World War II is like the bread and butter for so many games.
Yeah.
Like so many, like literally Battlefield, that's where they started. That's where they were at. They made how many World War II games? Like,
well, they had the Battlefield 1942 and it was 2-3 expansions I think they did for it until they moved on to Vietnam.
Yep.
And then they moved on to Battlefield 2, which was essentially modern warfare. Yeah.
Because they transitioned at the same time modern warfare transitioned. Because, again, Call of Duty changed the landscape and made modern warfare. Because the year before Activision and Call of Duty released World at War, which was the last game they set in World War II, and it was the first time they went to the other half of World War II, which was away from the Nazis and towards the Japanese, and that game was brutal as shit.
Mm-hmm.
Then Modern Warfare came out, and everyone's like, can't make, man, Battlefield does this. Or they like, nobody does this. Like, no one wants this. Like, you can't do it. And obviously, if you know the history of Call of Duty, they weren't the first to make multiplayer, console-based multiplayer, the end-all be-all. You can thank Halo for that. But Modern Warfare did change that look and feel and what everyone wanted. Like, yes, Halo was dope, but Modern Warfare 1, and especially Modern Warfare 2, just changed how multiplayer was going to play from then on out. And everyone's trying to catch up still to this day to do it. And every year, I say to myself, there's no way they can make multiplayer that much better. They keep proving me wrong. They keep proving everyone wrong, because that's why they're the number one. That's why they're used for competitions in like million-dollar tournaments, because their multiplayer is the best still. Yes, it has flaws, but it's not like flawed. But they by far make the best, most competitive multiplayer out there. And I don't think they're going to stop with this one.
Probably not.
Watch the trailer if you haven't seen it already. Just type in Call of Duty WWII, as they kept saying, which stands for World War II. And watch the fucking mayhem, man. It just, it doesn't even start slow. No. It just fucked up right away.
Just drops you right into it.
Just breaching, like, just beaching on Normandy, and just, like, death in the water, death on the beach. Then they jump ahead. Like, you can tell, like, they jump into the further skirmishes, and just, like, there is so much death in this trailer. There's one part, and I know Joe's going to know what I'm talking about, to just remind you how fucking brutal World War II was. And it's where it's a fist fight, and an American soldier, I think, has a Nazi on the ground, and they're trading blows, and, like, the Nazi hits him from the ground, and he gets jarred, but he grabs something, some metal object.
It's like the helmet. It's the Nazi's helmet. Yeah.
And just proceeds to beat the Nazi's face in with it.
Yep.
And you're like, fuck.
And that's, again, another very, because they did that in Saving Private Ryan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's, if you've ever wanted to play Saving Private Ryan, I think this is going to be by far your closest to it. Now, the story does not follow Saving Private Ryan. You're not going to save Matt Damon from being in war to send him back home because of all of his other brothers are dead. This tells a completely different story. The cool thing about this is you get to be, the story you're playing is the front lines. So you, the soldiers you're playing, are on the brink of war. You are pushing against the Nazi regime over and over again. So you are in the face of utter danger and utter warfare at every aspect of it.
Yeah.
There's no relentlessness. There's not, oh, we're the second battalion, we scoop up and push to the unknown areas. You are the front line, the offense going against the Nazis. And it looks fucking nuts, to tell you the truth.
It looks good.
Yep. But I think that's it.
Yeah, that's it. I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, nothing new crazy came out. Cars 3 trailer came out, but Joe didn't watch it, so we can't talk about it.
Nope, not yet. We can watch it in a few minutes here.
But yeah, so I think that's going to be it.
Yep.
For this week's episode of Comes Naturally, which means we are...
Joe.
And I'm Cody. And as usual, you fuckers just came naturally.